The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Stephen Flurry. And happy Black Friday. This is the day that I spend in perpetual bemusement that the UK seems to have imported Black Friday from the US, but not Thanksgiving. I was in town yesterday, and it was just a normal work day, of course, but all of the shops had signs up saying Black Friday sale now on, and it wasn't even a Friday. Anyway, I guess that happens because it's profitable for big US companies like Amazon and Walmart to bring Black Friday to the US, but nobody really makes a profit from being thankful. And I think Brent Nachtigall spoke yesterday about Thanksgiving and some messages from previous presidents on and about that day. But today I want to return to another aspect of Donald Trump's election that a lot of people have been writing on, and that is, can Donald Trump make America's military great again? Before we get to that, I wanted to have a talk about a related but slightly different subject, and that is some truly shocking decisions Britain is making about its military. But I want to introduce both these subjects from a book, or by reading a few quotes from a book called 2017, War with Russia, an urgent warning from senior military command. And while I was in town yesterday, I stopped by one of my favourite types of shops, a second-hand bookshop, where I spotted this book on sale for a couple of pounds. It's been a subject of quite a few articles over the past few months, so I thought I'd pick it up. It's by General Sir Richard Sheriff. He's the a recently retired Deputy Supreme Allied Commander Europe. It begins with a foreword by the former Supreme Allied Commander Europe, Admiral James Stavridis of the US Navy. So these are both leaders right at the very top of NATO. And they both give a very powerful warning about the state of the world and about how the world is sliding towards nuclear war, and that Britain, that America, that NATO is being complacent about that. Just in this foreword from the former Supreme Allied Commander Europe, Stavridis, he writes, I applaud my former comrade in arms, Deputy General or General Sir Richard Sheriff, for laying out the risks America and the West currently face in this brave, timely, and important book. And he warns some, he writes for in the same foreword, this former supreme commander of all NATO forces in Europe, some will say that the warnings of our most senior American admirals, generals, and the author of this book are a predictable response from men with an interest to protect, and they are no more than crying wolf. I would remind the naysayers of this. In 2017, it will be 100 years since the U.S. committed 4 million young Americans to the slaughterhouse of Europe, of whom 110,000 gave their lives. 25 years later, America had to do it again, and the cost was much greater in the Second World War. Had it not been for NATO and the determination and sacrifice of a new generation of Americans, and the subsequent Cold War could have had a very different outcome. And that's a theme. I haven't read the whole book, or anywhere close to it, mostly just the foreword and the preface, but that's a theme that comes throughout that, of just this complacency, this assumption of continual peace, that those that are warning of war are merely crying wolf or trying to protect their own status or military budgets, forgetting just how recently it was that America had to spend so many lives at war in Europe. General Sheriff, he writes that He wrote in this book that this book, in his preface, he writes that this book is that wake-up call before it's too late. A wake-up call to how the world is sliding towards nuclear war. He talks about how about Russia's invasion of Crimea, and he asks, would future historians judge this as our generation's Rhineland and Sudetenland moment, referring to when Germany, unopposed, took those key or marched troops into the Rhineland, violating the Versailles Treaty, took the Sudetenland. He goes on to write, eminent Western military thinkers were even now proclaiming the end of state-on-state industrial war. So even now, a lot of prominent leaders, they assume that state-on-state industrial war is over. It's just a case of fighting terrorists, non-state actors, maybe smaller, less industrialized states. But this idea of state-on-state war is in the past. But General Sir Richard goes on to write, but if my passionate study of history has taught me anything, it is to take no apparent certainty for granted, together with our inability to learn the lessons of the past. So it's a big warning there that we cannot just assume the way that so many do that we've reached the end of state-on-state industrial war. Now, he spoke on this subject on Fox News just about a month ago in relation to the run-up to the U.S. elections, and we'll play just a brief clip from that interview now.
Thank you.
The juxtaposition for someone like you must be really interesting, watching the debate happen between two potential presidents, but also hearing from our own lawmakers some real concerns about Russia, what Russia is doing. What are your observations just in general? What do you think the American public should know?
Well, I think we need to understand the real and present danger that potentially a resurgent Russia poses, the dynamic that was started with the invasion of Crimea in 2014, the ramp-up of military spending by Russia, the build-up of military forces, particularly the spotlight it throws on the Baltic states, which of course have significant Russian-speaking minorities, and the reality of the importance of building up our deterrent capability as a NATO alliance to protect and defend the alliance.
How bad is it, General, right now?
Well, I think, to be honest, the NATO alliance is a great alliance, the most successful alliance the world has seen, but there are plenty of indications that the Emperor's clothes are pretty skimpy when it comes to an effective deterrence posture.
The Emperor's clothes are pretty skimpy. He says, we like to think the war is a thing of the past, that NATO is indestructible, but all this is an illusion. This is a subject that Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry spoke about very recently on the Key of David. It was a Key of David, I think, about 3 weeks ago. And here's how he introduced that program.
Greetings, everyone. Right now, the greatest military aggressor in this world is Russia. I think more people and nations fear Russia than any other entity in this world. Russia is building a super military as the U.S. and some other nations grow weaker with their military effort, and it's disturbing to quite a lot of people.
I didn't write down the name of that program, but I believe it was something like The Mysterious Ending of the Old Testament. But in the first kind of segment of that program, Mr. Flurry went on to talk about the Satan II missile. This huge missile that Russia is developing, it can carry 10 heavy warheads or 15 lighter ones, so this one missile could take out 10 or 15 cities with those warheads, effectively making this one Satan II missile capable of destroying Britain or France or just an entire European country. And Mr. Flurry said, when you look at these realities, it's a very sobering picture. And here's another clip from that Key of David program.
And already in the Middle East, Russia has been very aggressive and has destroyed thousands and thousands of lives, many of those people, innocent people, that didn't have any protection whatsoever. And they've also gotten control of just recently Georgia and most of Ukraine, and have been very aggressive. So what kind of a future is it we're going to have? Where is all this headed? I mean, really, we have to be on some kind of a trajectory and look down the road and say, well, where is this leading? Well, the only way we can really know fully is through God's Word. God tells us very clearly where it's leading. But many, many intellectual men and women fear that it's going to be very bad news, the total outcome here. It's the blackest nightmare we've ever faced, that of whether or not the human race can survive, whether it can even survive.
So when you look at world events, it is, as Mr. Flurry said, a black nightmare. When you look at Russia, when you look at the missiles that they're developing, the trajectory that we're on. And as Mr. Flurry said there, you know, if you want to know the specifics, the only way you can get that is from the Bible. But even just looking at that trajectory, you get a lot of people that can see, just in general, it's not a good future that we're heading for. Now, the Bible gives us much more details. The Bible, it's only the Bible that tells us that of the hope that's coming beyond that. But as he said there, even a lot of these men can see what a dangerous, what a black nightmare we're heading to. And so Mr. Flurry was giving this warning, and now you see the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in Europe, the Deputy Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in Europe, at least the former people occupying those two positions right at the top of NATO, giving a very sobering warning about the trajectory that we're on, about where world events are leading. Those are powerful, powerful sources from very capable, very senior, very knowledgeable men in this world. Now, I want to focus at first on how Britain is responding, largely because it's just especially ridiculous. General Sir Richard Sheriff has been warning about this for several years. Instead of listening to him, though, the British government, they've wanted to court-martial him. One of their top military leaders is speaking out about these huge, these foolish risks that the nation is taking, but instead of taking note, they just look for ways to silence him. Here's what he said about Britain in his book. He writes that in Europe, the United Kingdom, Europe's premier military power since the Second World War, was led from 2010 by a coalition Prime Minister, David Cameron, who made himself increasingly irrelevant on the international scene. His defence review of 2010 was nothing more than a gamble based on an assumption that the international scene would remain benign. Wars and conflicts that threatened the security of the United Kingdom were declared a thing of the past. The UK's national strategy proclaimed that there was no existential threat to these shores. How irresponsibly naive that sounds as I write these words today. Then he goes on to write, having unilaterally declared that this was the way the world would be for the foreseeable future, the 2010 review then emasculated British military capacity. The consequences are far-reaching and difficult, if not near impossible, to reverse. 20,000 experienced regular soldiers axed from the army. The Royal Navy frigate and destroyer numbers, the workhorses of any fleet, cut right back. And he went on to talk about how some ships went straight from being used on the front line in the blockade of Libya in 2011 to the scrap heap. So these weren't ships that were maybe surplus to requirement, not being used or sitting in reserve in a dockyard somewhere, but ships that were needed, that were on the front lines, being retired. And surely now, though, well, just one more quote from here. He was talking about how the cuts to the maritime capacity, the cuts to the Royal Air Force, the cuts to the maritime defence and patrol aircraft for the Royal Air Force, the removal of what he's called essential capability for a proud maritime nation. After all of that, he writes, it would be difficult to overstate the disbelief of our allies or delight of our enemies at this short-sighted decision. So just a huge cutback. Matt, and we've talked about it before on this program, on the Trumpet website, the way Britain has just radically downsized its army. In 2014, the Prime Minister, he wrote an article saying that Britain should avoid sending armies to fight. And General Sir Richard Sheriff wrote that this was strongly implying that the army's primary task was now humanitarian relief. And he talked about how Britain was now had a leadership that carried an increasingly tiny and impotent stick rather than walking softly and carrying a big stick. He concludes this section by writing that Britain was now little different from any other semi-pacifistic European social democracy, more interested in protecting welfare and benefits than maintaining adequate defences. And that's exactly what happens. He did, as he wrote, Britain did fast lose the will to fight for what it believed in. But surely now, in a world that's so obviously gotten more dangerous, where the Middle East is destabilizing, with Russia openly invading Ukraine and changing borders by force within Europe, for the first time, Richard Pipsett, he says for the first time since the 1940s, I think that's conveniently forgetting about Yugoslavia and NATO missions breaking up Yugoslavia there. But anyway, it's still just a very dangerous precedent and something that is very rarely done, changing borders by force within Europe. Surely with the world, in a world with all this going on, Britain would have woken up. You could argue to a certain extent America, well, they've not really woken up, but you've got, you know, they just voted in Donald Trump, who talked about the dangers of ISIS, at least, and the dangers that were out there, that talked about it being a dangerous world, about America spending more on its military. Has Britain responded in any way? Well, this is a headline from Foreign Policy just this week. Is the sun setting on the Royal Navy? And this article states, the United Kingdom's Navy is struggling to stay afloat, and its Parliament isn't too happy about it. On Monday, the Parliamentary Defence Select Committee issued a report excoriating the Royal Navy's woefully low warship numbers and mismanaged modernisation programme, with one of Europe's most powerful navies in dire straits. That's the condition of Britain's Navy right now, in dire straits. Just continuing with this article, NATO could face troubled waters in the future as Russia bolsters its own NATO forces. A bit further down in this article, they write that the Royal Navy faced embarrassing setbacks in the past years, just as it undergoes a major fleet modernization program. It talked about how all six of a new type of destroyers, the most modern ship in the Navy's fleet, they all have to be taken back and refitted now because they keep breaking down. They write that the UK's pledge to maintain a fleet of 19 frigates and destroyers is now in question if new ships can't replace rusting predecessors in time. So just in general, the Navy is facing huge problems. And then here's a mind-boggling decision that the Royal Navy... It emerged a week or two, I think it was last week, it emerged that the Royal Navy had made. This is an article from The Register. Royal Navy warships will be less capable of fighting enemy vessels than they were in the 19th century, as Britain's Harpoon anti-ship missile will be withdrawn in 2 years with no replacement in sight. This was a story that I saw in the Telegraph, and I had to go and look it up and look up a whole bunch more articles because I didn't quite believe it. It seems such a mind-bogglingly ridiculous thing to do, as you'll see as we talk about this more. I mean, even knowing the trajectory that Britain's Navy had been on, all of these cuts that, and just foolish cuts that that Britain had made, I couldn't quite believe that the Royal Navy, that Britain's Defence Ministry would have done something quite so bizarrely ridiculous as decide to have no missiles on its ships. But yeah, it is. It's even in IHS Jane's, kind of the go-to place for military news. It's official. They're doing this. They're taking their missiles off their ships, leaving their ships now with smaller guns than they had over 100 years ago. And I'll read a few different bits from a few different news sources just to show this isn't something that one particular news source is making up. It writes, this is going back to the Register, without the Harpoon missile, the Navy's escort fleet, that is Type 45 anti-aircraft destroyers and Type 23 anti-submarine frigates, will be left with purely defensive missile weapons, various automatic guns of up to 30mm caliber, and a single 4.5-inch medium gun. And this article then goes on to describe some of the weaponry on British ships in the late 19th century. You know, the 1800s, where ships were just coming out of the sail age and you had coal ships back then, and then Britain was just at the early 20th century beginning the switch over to oil. But going all the way back to then, these ships had bigger guns than the ships the Royal Navy's relying on now. So these old ships had better firepower than the most modern ones in the Royal Navy. And this article, again going back to the Register, says, after 2018, the Royal Navy's frontline warships would be hopelessly outgunned by century-old designs. Not by modern peers, not by other navies, but by the Royal Navy 100 years ago. The same article quotes Douglas Chapham, an MP for the Scottish National Party, and he says, not only does the Royal Navy find itself with a historic low of 17 usable frigates and destroyers, we now find out that these warships will be left defenceless in a way that surely no other modern navy would consider acceptable. And this article, it wrote, British naval credibility will vanish down the toilet. And you've got to think, what on earth would other countries think, looking at what Britain is doing to its own navy? So why is Britain getting rid of these missiles? Well, money. The defense blog Think Defense, they note that even the current missiles that Britain's navy has been using, that the current missiles are often considered to be obsolete in a contemporary operating environment. So the ones it has right now are considered obsolete because they don't have precision guidance technology. It would be expensive to upgrade them with the latest technology, so they're simply going to do without missiles. Now, in 2020, Britain is scheduled to have Sea Venom missiles fully operational. But A, that still leaves a two-year gap, so these current missiles, they're going to be phased out in 2018. So between 2018 and 2020, there'll be no operational missiles. And then the Sea Venom missiles, they're launched by helicopter. So you've got to have seas that are calm enough for a helicopter to be launched. You've got to then also have, you know, the conditions that a helicopter can be launched without being shot down. So the replacement missiles are going to make the UK's navy a whole lot more vulnerable than it is right now. And this is from Popular Mechanics. They write, until the anti-ship missile issue is fixed, one of the finest navies in the world will be at a critical disadvantage. Against any competent navy in a ship-versus-ship fight, the Royal Navy is in for a humiliating defeat. So once these missiles are retired in 2018, the British Navy, I think the guns have a range of about 30 kilometres versus the missiles that had a range of 130 kilometres, I think it's about 20 miles or 80 miles. So 20 miles for the guns, I think around 80 miles for the missiles. So just about any modern navy would be able to sink a British ship before it even gets in range and can use its guns. This is from Ars Technica. They write, if the Royal Navy is facing budget cuts, it may have simply been a case of choosing to spend what money it does have on keeping the UK's ever-shrinking fleet afloat rather than equipping ships with rarely used and very expensive missiles. Being completely unable to engage other navies, at least for a few years, must be a pretty bitter pill to swallow, though. Yep, so that's it. Britain has a just about useless navy for the next few years. The Telegraph, they said that naval sources said that the decision was like Nelson deciding to get rid of his cannons and go back to muskets. Now, as some sources have pointed out, in an emergency if a war was to break out, the UK could still bring the Harpoon out of retirement after 2018. But A, that's still a major blow to the prestige of the Navy, but also it's a major blow to the readiness of the Navy. It means that all the Navy ships would have to, if in case of a war, go back to Britain, be refitted with the old missiles that are obsolete anyway before they could be of any use. And they'd have to all sail back to Britain. But it's an astonishing decision. And again, this isn't, say, Germany or France, a nation that has land borders and an army to defend itself. This is Britain, an island nation that the Navy is the main line of defence, has historically been the nation's main defence in recent times along with the Air Force, but an absolutely fundamental part of defending Britain. And Britain is saying, well, okay, you know, it's too expensive to have a useful Navy, we're just going to retire missiles after 2018. It's not just the Navy that's defenceless, it's the entire nation that is defenseless, or at least put in an extremely poor position by that. Now, this is also a decision that is an exact fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Hosea 7, verse 11, says that Ephraim is like a silly dove without sense. Now, Ephraim in the Bible refers to modern Britain, particularly England. And to prove that for yourself, you can write for our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com, for free. Everything, all of our literature is free. Shipping is free. Everything is free. We just want people to be able to have to read and to study this material. We also don't send you bunches of junk mail or pass your address on to anybody. We just want to be able to get this material out there so that people can read the warning that the Bible gives to our modern nations today. So to read more about Britain in the Bible, you can request that free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Mr. Hilliker wrote a few... Mr. Joel Hilliker, Trumpet's managing editor, he wrote about another instance of a foolish military decision by Britain. And writing about this verse in Hosea 7:11 a few years ago, he writes, "Silly, Ephraim being a silly dove, silly means simple, easily fooled, and the dove perfectly symbolizes the senseless, toothless, and naive nation Britain has become." Which is exactly true, and Mr. Hilliker goes on to write in this, as the Trumpet editor-in-chief has written, "No silly dove nation can endure in a world full of hawks and tigers." So this is yet another, after a whole string with all these defense cuts that Britain has been putting into place, a whole string of silly dove decisions. Now this verse in Hosea 7, it goes on to say that Britain is going to rely on Germany. It makes all these foolish decisions, gutting its military, and so it has to trust in another nation for its defense instead. And then, what does that say about the quality of your leadership, your decision makings, when an island nation that relies fundamentally for its defense on its navy says, okay, we can just rely on 100-year-old technologies. That's fine. Our navy's really weak. It could be defeated by any other navy on the planet. But, we think the world's going to be fairly peaceful over the next few years. That is a silly dove decision, and that is inviting disaster. You've been listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're going to take a short break now, and when we get back, we'll talk about America's military.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer, standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And in the first segment, we were talking about how dangerous the world is becoming, about some serious warnings from the former Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in Europe, the Deputy Former Supreme Commander of Allied Forces Europe. And we've talked about how foolishly Britain was responding to that, making its navy next to useless. But what about the US? How does the US stack up? How is it dealing with this increasingly dangerous world? The Heritage Foundation published their review of U.S. military strength just over a week ago. And the Daily Signal, they summarized some of the Heritage Foundation's findings in this very detailed report. They talk about how that the Task Force on Nuclear Weapons Management, they concluded that the readiness of forces assigned the nuclear mission is seriously eroded. So they began by talking about the most powerful weapons America has. And that I think we've published an article. I should have looked up exactly what it was called a couple of years ago, just talking about how dire the defense and the practice and training all around securing America's nuclear arsenal, how weak that has become. And this warns even that probably even since then, the readiness of forces assigned the nuclear mission is seriously eroded. They go on to talk about this Armata tank that Russia is developing. They write that it's lighter and faster than the tanks of the US and its allies. A British intelligence report called it the most revolutionary tank in a generation. Personally, I'm still a little bit skeptical about the tank. I think Russians are, or the Russian military does tend to, or is quite good at exaggerating the effectiveness of some of its weapons. We just don't think, I don't think we know yet a lot or enough about some of these things, like the tank, to really pass much judgment. However, this report goes on to say, by contrast, the US has delayed or cancelled multiple ground combat vehicles programs, and with none currently under development, the future of such capabilities remains uncertain. This article goes on to say, while Russia builds up its forces along its border with NATO, America is increasingly weakened by continued reductions in troop level, having the smallest standing army since 1940. Army procurement was cut 35% between the fiscal years 2011 and 2015, and the military as a whole is now smaller than it was before 9/11. They write that the accelerated troop reduction plan driven by the Obama administration has forced military officials to make difficult decisions in strategic operations. So America's military is shrinking, is being cut back. It then goes on to address the Navy and talk about how the Navy is struggling to field a fleet that can constantly maintain a pressure around the world. By law, the Navy is required to operate 11 aircraft carriers. Currently, they're operating 10 and have done for a number of years in a row. They write that at the other end of the surface fleet, the Navy has held that it requires 52 small surface combatants, such as frigates or mine-hunting vessels, yet it currently only sails 17. Now, that's still a lot more than Britain, but that's way below what the Navy says it needs. It says this is reflected in the Navy's fleet as a whole, which has shrunken by 13% since 9/11 and is our smallest fleet since 1916. So America, too, is cutting its military back to historic levels, more so in some areas than others. It says while the index shows the need for 350 U.S. ships, the Navy currently stands at only 272. Across the services, the military is also experiencing aircraft shortages and procurement delays. It talks about the problems with the F-35 that we've talked about on this program, and about how the F-35s, they're not coming online quick enough to replace aging fighter aircraft. Shortages with helicopters in the Marine Corps. The Air Force still fields nearly the 1,200 fighter aircraft recommended by the index, it writes, but it is currently short about 700 pilots that can operate them, meaning capacity is actually half of what is in the inventory. It then goes on to write, furthermore, shortfalls in the Air Force's parts inventory and a shortage of aircraft personnel have meant that fewer aircraft are available for training and contingency operations. This reduction in training opportunities has resulted in a sharp decline in readiness and an increase in aircraft mishaps attributed to human error. Lower aircraft numbers in the Air Force have also resulted in higher usage rates for available aircraft, which accelerates the wear and tear on already strained airframes and increases the risk of future mishaps. Then this article concludes, at least in terms of the quotes that I noted down, the 2017 Index of U.S. Military Strength reveals a continuation of the troubling trends described in the first two editions. While the size and capability of the U.S. military to continue to decline, U.S. adversaries are expanding their influence and capabilities around the globe. So that's a sobering picture. As the world gets more dangerous, America is cutting back, shrinking its military. Now, America still spends far more on its military than any other nation does. A few months ago, I wrote an article talking about the massive waste in that spending. And the purpose of that article wasn't just to highlight how much was being wasted, but to ask, what does all this waste say about the military, about the quality of the decisions being made and the leadership? When weapons that are going to be at the front line of American defense, when they're designed not to be the best weapons possible, but to create jobs in key congressional districts, you know, yes, that creates huge amounts of wealth, but it also says, it also means that we're compromising the weapons. We're not designing the best weapons possible, we're designing the best job creators possible. And what does that say again about the people making those decisions? How focused are they on keeping America safe, and what other foolish decisions have been made? And related to this vast amount of wastage is another problem the US military has, and that was highlighted by, again, another article, I think it was published the week before this week, called The American Military's Real Problem, Shooting Ants with Elephant Guns. And this talked about the recent attacks on American ships in the Red Sea in October. And that's something, we saw something there that we've talked about before that we often see, where the cost of fending off those attacks for just a few seconds was $8 million. The cost to the rebels launching those attacks on US ships in the Red Sea was about $500,000. So it cost well over 10 times more to defend then than it did to attack. And this article writes, military leaders have an amazing ability to develop strategy, but if they fail to take into account the economic costs, their strategies could become inherently unviable and unsustainable. So again, and then look at that at the wider picture of it's costing America 10 times more to defend than it does to attack. Well, can America's vast military budget keep America safe? And again, what does it say about America's readiness, about America's alertness in the face of world events? If America's military is being cut back, if its navy is the smallest size since 1916, if the army is at its, or the ground force at its lowest, standing army since 1940, what does that say about the alertness, the readiness of America's military leaders, America's political leaders, in the face of these growing dangers that we read these top generals warning about at the start? Now, President Trump says he wants to reverse, or President-elect Donald Trump says he wants to reverse the spending cuts on the military. There have been quite a few articles now asking, well, can he do that? Reuters had an article early this week titled Data Dive, Trump's Military Ambition Could Run into Budget Buzzsaw. And it talked about how the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget Estimates, they estimate that the plan would add another $150 billion in defense spending. And as Reuters and a few others have pointed out, that cannot happen under the current Budget Control Act that was passed in 2011. And getting that overridden or changed, that may not be so easy. Republicans control both the House and the Senate. But the Hill points out Congress is controlled by the GOP, but not all Republicans are in favor of more military spending. Increasing defense spending also could increase the deficit, something Trump and the GOP are loath to do. He separately wants to cut taxes, including for the wealthy, which could add to deficit concerns. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if they do still get this through, if Donald Trump and the Republicans do reach an agreement here to increase spending. Maybe not as much as he wants, but I think it's quite likely that they'll find a way to do that. Though then also Mackenzie Eaglin, who's a defense analyst with the conservative American Enterprise Institute, she's called Trump spending fans, she's advised Donald Trump's advisors, but she said that the plans were a fantasy. She said, I tried several times to disabuse them of the notion that they could even pay for a fraction of Trump's build-up costs. Now, maybe she's right, maybe she's not. There is a lot of waste in the military, in the Pentagon, and Donald Trump, with his business background, maybe he will be the type of person who can come along and eliminate some of that waste and spend the money more effectively. But there's no denying the fact that this rising debt and the costs on America could put ultimately America in a similar position to Britain, having to make these painful concessions to their military. Now, Britain could spend more on its military. The government is prioritizing things like welfare, like pensions, like foreign aid over the military. But America's going to face those same pressures to spend heavily on those things too. In the U.S., a group of people, it was quite a very senior group. There was Admiral Navy Mike Mullen, he's the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Henry Kissinger, another former Secretary of State and very influential thinker, of course, and then some former defense secretaries, Robert Gates, Leon Panetta, former national security advisors. They put together a joint statement, and they wrote, as individuals who have served the nation in both international and domestic leading roles, we continue to believe that our long-term debt is the single greatest threat to our national security. And they're certainly right in pointing out the major threat that debt is to national security. Mike Mullen, he said that in a statement around this time that the health of the country, the prosperity we care about, the security we care about are just inextricably linked. And we keep looking away, hoping it will get better, and it gets worse. So America, this They're trying to keep themselves secure by spending these huge amounts, but this growing debt could make that impossible at some point. He said, again, Admiral, this is Admiral Mullen, it's about debt levels and the inability to pay our bills. And if we don't get our fiscal house in order, it's going to dramatically affect our security of our country. Now, could America be forced into the same kind of ridiculous decisions as Britain deciding not to put missiles on its ships? Now, the Bible does single out, as we read in Hosea before the break, Britain as being a silly dove, and it mentions specifically Britain and not America, so maybe that's... it is an indication that America won't get quite as ridiculous as some of the cuts Britain is making. Its military spending right now is certainly far, far higher than Britain's is and military capacity and readiness. But Admiral Mike Mullen especially, he's been warning about the danger of this debt and that it poses for a long time. And here's what he said on January 21st, 2014.
In the last year or so, I mean, everybody's doing handstands because the deficit's gone down. It's as if the problem went away. And the problem is that hasn't affected the ticker at all. It's above $17 trillion. It was $16 trillion a year ago. And we just can't be the country that we are capable of at a time in the world where we're needed as much as we've ever been needed if we just keep spending ourselves into oblivion. We won't be able to make the investments. We will continue to lose what I consider to be credit, if you will, on the international stage. So it's something that's got to turn around. And it's going to take sacrifice, quite frankly, on the part of everybody. The Pentagon gets a lot of money. I understand that. It's 50% of the discretionary spending roughly every year in the government. But you could take the whole Pentagon budget, pour it into the debt, and it would have a issue, and it would have a minimum impact. It's got to be the entitlement piece that we all know about. We've been talking about it for years, and we're going to have to figure out how to get at it.
That gives you a sense of the scale of the problem. America spends around $500 billion a year on its military budget. And you heard there the Admiral saying, well, we could take that entire $500 billion and put that towards spending off the debt, and it still wouldn't make a dent. And he's talked about how the rising interest payments, you know, it just takes the interest rate on America's debt to go up ever so slightly, because it's at its historic lows right now. But just go up ever so slightly, and America could very easily be spending more, even dramatically more, on interest payments, than it is on defense. So it's certainly a huge problem there. Now, Donald Trump, he could well make some things better in the short term. Maybe he will be able to change the budget act so he can spend more on defense, and maybe he will be able to cut some waste. But as Mr. Stephen Fleury pointed out on this program earlier in the week, I'm not quite sure which, he still plans on borrowing a huge amount of money. He still plans on increasing the debt. A lot of that spending is still going to be debt-fueled. Now, maybe there will be a short-term debt-fueled boost in America's defense spending, and maybe that will feed through to some increased power. But that debt is still going to be there, still ready to cause some huge problems, like this former chief of the General Staff, Mike Mullen, is pointing out. And America has been relying on this huge military spending for defense. And that is the challenge. It means America keeps having to spend so that it's the most advanced nation in a whole bunch of different areas. You know, they have to deal with space now and kind of the cutting edge of space warfare and making sure they're ahead of the curve in what Russia and what China can do. Things like cyber warfare and trying to figure out, well, how do we stay ahead of other major powers, make sure we're not impacted on cyber warfare, on missile defense. And in just about all of these areas, just like the missiles in the Red Sea, it's 10 times or more cheaper to attack than it is to defend. Coming up with a rocket that can knock down a satellite, that's not all that difficult. Russia and China and certainly Europe, they can all do that. Even Iran and North Korea, they may well be close to being able to knock out at least low Earth orbit satellites. Coming up with a system that can protect all of your satellites, that's incredibly hard. Now you've got to somehow prevent other missiles getting up to the satellites or knock them down with more missiles. And that's just one example, but it's really true across all of those areas that it's much, much more expensive to defend than it is to be able to attack. And then all it takes is for one nation to get an edge over America in just one of these areas, and it could prove catastrophic. And these danger areas, you know, they grow by the day. It would take a vast amount of spending, even vaster than the current spending, for America to stay ahead of every nation in every potential danger. And there are indications that America is slipping behind. Just today, I saw more stories about China working on a hypersonic missile. And this is an area that Russia and China appear to be ahead of the U.S. with these missiles that travel so fast and crucially. I don't think they travel actually faster than an ICBM, but they travel much, much lower down. They can change direction, much more unpredictable, many, 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 many times more hard, more difficult to intercept than a more standard missile is. And America, I think under the current spending plans, they're not even going to begin to look into ways to be able to shoot these down until the mid-2020s. So trying to stay ahead in all of these areas that America would need to stay ahead in to be completely secure is incredibly difficult. So kind of putting everything that we've talked about today together, you know, we saw at the start the world is an increasingly dangerous place. We've talked about how the American military is increasingly less able to deal with these threats, and then debt is rising, and this threatens the entire U.S. defense budget and really the entire economy. Now, America has relied on massive military spending for its defense. But fundamentally, you know, that cannot provide security forever. It hasn't provided security forever for any other nation. It is impossible to anticipate every possible challenge. And just this idea of throwing money at the problem, it has led to these more and more expensive weapons that sees America just having to spend far more than anybody else in order to keep safe. But if America can't depend on this massive military spending to keep safe in this dangerous world, well, what is a sure defense? Well, ultimately, the only sure defense is to trust in God. That is the opposite of what America is doing. It is a dangerous world. Nationally, individually, we do need a sure defense. And Britain is going about it just by ignoring the danger, by being a silly dove. America is trusting in its great wealth for defense at the same time that they undermine that great wealth through just massive borrowing. But at the same time, it's also clear America's leaders, they aren't particularly vigilant against an attack. They've fallen for many of the same assumptions that we spoke about at the start, that great power wars between major industrial enemies are a thing of the past, and so much of America's spending is focused on fighting an Iran or a North Korea-sized kind of target and trying to fight one of those with minimal casualties. And America, already they've made big cutbacks, and it's becoming increasingly clear that this massive spending cannot defend against every possible angle of attack. And Herbert W. Armstrong spoke about this sermon in a sermon. The sermon was simply titled Prophecy, and I'll play a clip from that for you right now.
My friends, we have forsaken our God. We put on our dollars. In God we trust. Sometimes I wonder if the God we trust in isn't that very dollar. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Eternal, and the people whom he hath chosen for his own inheritance. The Eternal looketh from heaven, he beholdeth all the sons of men, and he looketh upon all the inhabitants of the earth, and he can see you down here, and me, and he sees us all. He fashioneth their hearts alike, he considereth all their works. There is no king saved by a multitude of an host. Now, a host means an army. A king is not saved by his army. A mighty man is not delivered by much strength. In other words, human strength, military strength, physical strength, never wins a war. Now, I know most people don't believe that because most people don't know God. And they don't know about God's purpose. And they don't know what God is like. And they don't know of God's powers. And they don't know that God is ever looking right down on this earth and that he is concerned about us and this earth.
And so that is why, despite all this massive spending, the Taliban is retaking Afghanistan, Iran is taking over Iraq, America failed in its objectives in Vietnam and South Korea. You know, how can a ragtag band of tribal warriors beat a superpower? Well, because massive defense budgets cannot protect, and because God is cursing America. And here's another quote from that same sermon.
If this nation will wake up, if our nation will heed this warning, no invasion is going to come. And if anyone ever dares invade our nation, God will repel them and put them back, and a lot quicker than he did in World War I or World War II. We were not relying on God in World War I and World War II, really. No, we were relying on our military arms. We were relying on our allies. You know that we were. I tell you, my friends, I think we don't know what it is to really rely on God. When you rely on God, you don't rely on other things along with it. You rely on God, as some of the ancient kings of Judah did, and they were really protected. They didn't even have an army. Not very many people have enough faith in God to believe he could protect us without an army today. No, we don't have that kind of faith. And of course, as long as we don't have it, we're not going to get that kind of protection either. So I guess about all that's left for the United States is what military protection and allies it can get. Because it's real security this nation has forsaken. God help us then to come back to our God and to turn to him. And if the nation...
And this is where a program on Britain and America's military unexpectedly ties in with Thanksgiving and Brent's program yesterday. You know, Thanksgiving is about giving thanks to God for our blessings, but Britain and America, we've forgotten that those blessings even came from God in the first place. And so we don't trust in God to protect those blessings, to continue them. And so America now trusts in military power. Now, that's certainly better than just the silly dove behavior that Britain is following up with. But even so, if we don't trust in God, that can't protect us. So that trust in God, that instead is our sure defense in this dangerous world. That would be there for the nation if it would repent deeply, which there isn't absolutely no signs of it doing. It's there for us individually. No matter how dangerous this world gets, God can protect us more individually, more securely than any weapon system or any massive defense budget. Now, ultimately, God is going to prevent mankind from destroying himself with these terrible weapons. Now, that kind of war, it will be very destructive, but God is going to protect those that obey, that repent, that trust him. He'll prevent mankind from wiping himself out as well. And in fact, only these kind of horrifying weapons are going to begin that process that will lead to man finally not trusting in himself and see man trusting in God. And then once that happens, God will finally be able to teach man the way that leads to happiness and to peace. And if you want more on this subject, we have a little book we can send you for free called We Have Had Our Last Chance. And it begins by discussing the failings of America's military power today and in recent times. And the failings of many of the ways America has used that power. And then discusses why mankind has failed to bring peace, why America's military might fails to keep the peace in the world, and why God is allowing this. So you can get that from our website, as I mentioned at the end of the first half, on thetrumpet.com, where we have much else that can help you and just about everything else that you want to know that we've touched on this program. Now, that's about it from me today. Mr. Stephen Flurry, he will be back, I believe, on Monday. So don't forget about that weekend homework assignment that he gives, to drop us an email at td@kpcg.fm. I'm sure he'd really appreciate being able to read those, being able to read some of those out online. I'll be sticking around for now here at Edstone. We're getting ready to record Trumpet Hour. I'll be talking about Angela Merkel's bid to run for a fourth term and the rising tide of German nationalism, and some great articles on that. So stick around for that and listen to that. That will be air at 4 p.m. and tune in on Monday next time for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.